This is the Humboldt Chronicles.
I am the queen of everything. Gotta be high before I can sway. Light a tea and let it be. If you a viper.
I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. The Humboldt Chronicles is made possible by Bear Extraction House, Lost Coast Science, and Charleston Tree Service. To all of our sponsors, thank you very much. Truth is, we could not do it without you. Here's what we know. For more than 50 years now, people around here have worked hard to establish the Humboldt brand, the Mendocino brand, the Emerald Triangle name, and we should work just as hard to protect them. They're worth something, and they represent decades of innovations, really. Everything that's been done in the cannabis industry in this part of California. Ingenuity and years of trial and error that resulted in a great product. So we should do everything we can to make sure they are protected. But how? Well, part of the answer to that might be the establishment of appellations. In the next hour, we'll talk appellations and all things Humboldt brand, Mendocino brand, Emerald Triangle brand, and focus on protecting them with Ross Gordon. He's policy director at the Humboldt County Growers Alliance, and Janine Coleman, executive director of the Origins Council and co-founder of the Mendocino Appellations Project. By the way, they are joining us tonight by phone, which is the appropriate social distance for the times in which we find ourselves. We're going to start, though, with some background. Call it appellations in a nutshell. How is appellation defined? How does an appellation designation work? Well, here's some frame of reference to set up our discussion.
Associating a product, especially food or wine, with a specific geographic place or region is a very old practice. Very old. In fact, the Old Testament book of Ezekiel references the district in what is now western Syria as the source of wine favored by Nebuchadnezzar and the kings of Persia. The tradition of associating products with geographic locations continued through antiquity and the Middle Ages, though more by custom than through any formal legal process or standardized set of rules. Indeed, generic names for many products that we use still today are derived from the product's location of origin. Cheddar cheese, for example, comes from the town of Cheddar in England. Sherry is the anglicized name of the town Jerez in Spain. Varnish derives from the Latin name for a town in Libya where the resin from local trees was first used to create, varnish. There are many more such examples. Eventually, these informal geographic associations were made more formal, with exclusive protections afforded to designated zones. The very first formal appellation, which is the term for this type of geographic designation when used in the wine context, was established in Chianti, Italy in 1716. As the appellation originally specified, in order to be called Chianti, a wine had to be produced exclusively from grapes grown in the officially designated Chianti region of central Tuscany. The appellation was later amended to specify the particular types of grapes that must exclusively be used in a wine labeled Chianti. Similar appellations were established in countries outside of Italy, including France, Spain, Greece, Hungary, and many other locations. The current-day European Union has established regulations for protected designations of origin, affording appellation-like protections for a wide variety of products such as vinegar, olive oil, cheese, varieties of meat, even certain fruits and vegetables. Here in the United States, at least at the federal level, grape appellations are called American Viticultural Areas, or AVAs. AVAs are established and regulated by the Tax and Trade Bureau, which is a unit of the Treasury Department. The first AVA established in the United States was the Augusta AVA, which recognizes an area near the town of Augusta, Missouri. The Augusta AVA was established in June of 1980, and currently there are 246 AVAs in the U.S., with more than half of them, 139 to be exact, in the Golden State of California. The idea behind all of this is that the area where a product is made or grown, especially an agricultural product, imparts unique characteristics to that product, and further, that there are certain areas where conditions are just so. The characteristics of the soil, for example, the elevation of the land, the varied temperature throughout the day, the length of the growing season, and so forth, that the products coming from that particular place are of a quality found nowhere else. So if, for example, the wine made from grapes grown in a very specific region of Tuscany, Italy, is so special and so desired, then there is great value in making sure that only wines from that region can legally bear the label Chianti. Think of it as a specialized form of brand or trademark control. Consumers can know that if the bottle says Chianti, they are getting a wine with particular characteristics and of a dependable quality, and producers of Chianti are protected against inferior wines sullying their brand. At this point, you may be asking yourself, what on earth does all of this have to do with cannabis? Am I really listening to the Humboldt Chronicles? Yes, you are, and thank you. Here's where our story that started in the book of Ezekiel makes its turn toward the Emerald Triangle. On February 20th of this year, the California Department of Food and Agriculture's Cal Cannabis Cultivation Licensing Division, that's a mouthful, released a set of proposed regulations for establishing cannabis appellations of origin. According to the division's webpage, an appellation of origin is a protected designation that identifies the geographical origin of a product and how that product was produced. CDFA's Cannabis Appellations Program will promote regional cannabis products and local businesses. It will prevent the misrepresentation of a cannabis product's origin and support consumer confidence about a cannabis product's origin and characteristics. Pursuant to the California Business and Professional Code, CDFA has until January 1, 2021 to develop the process according to which California cannabis appellations of origin may be established. The text of the proposed rules is available on the Cal Cannabis website, and anyone may submit comments on the proposal. Written comments are due by April the 6th. Additionally, written or verbal comments can be made at a public hearing taking place in Sacramento on April the 14th. We already know the reputation that the word Humboldt has in the cannabis industry. For decades now, marijuana grown in Humboldt and the larger Emerald Triangle region has been prized as among the finest in the world. How important, then, is it for Humboldt, for Mendocino, for Trinity, to establish appellations of origin? How stringent should the requirements be for a company to market Humboldt brand cannabis products? Should smaller geographic areas pursue their own appellations, grown in honeydew, for example? Can appellations overlap, as they do in the wine context? Who will decide what the rules are for a Humboldt appellation? How will an appellation be protected and enforced once it is established? There are a lot of questions still to be answered.
And fortunately for me, and fortunately for Larry, to answer some of those questions that remain, we have two people with us tonight who have put a lot of thought into these issues.
Yeah, as you mentioned earlier, we have Ross Gordon, who's Policy Director of the Humboldt County Growers Alliance, on the phone with us, along with Janine Coleman, who's Executive Director of the Mendocino-based Origins Project, and who is also the co-founder of the Mendocino Appellation Project. Welcome to both of you, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having
great to be
us.
Here.
Well, it is
glad to be back on.
It is our pleasure, and thank you for respecting the appropriate social distance. We're doing all this over the telephone. Janine, I wanted to start with you and sort of ask a big picture question. I'm trying to gauge how important establishing appellations is for the cannabis industry. Is it an overstatement to say that it's a critical part of the future of the cannabis industry?
Well, from my perspective, it absolutely is, and I got involved with policy development when it was starting to roll out in 2015 for California cannabis. And shortly thereafter, I started working on appellations development because I saw the importance in the long-term picture and also as this existing industry transitions into a regulatory framework, the importance to really market based on our historic value set and narrative and practices that we've, you know, really developed over the past many decades in rural California. And so I would say it's very essential, particularly to our rural producing communities, and I think the culture and the way of life and the values that are woven through those communities.
Ross, hi, this is Chuck. Good to speak with you again. We've touched on this issue with you somewhat before, but what I'm wondering now is this. Appellations worked for wine in Napa and Chianti in Italy, for example. Are those good comparisons for cannabis in California or not?
I think in a lot of ways they are good comparisons. So there are definitely different ways that appellations play out depending on the type of product that you're talking about. But I think the underlying idea of an appellation is the same. And I think you did a really good job describing it in sort of the introduction just now, which is to draw a link between a product and the place in which it's grown and showing how the climate, the elevation, the soils, the soil microbiome, the culture, the cultivation practices, how do all of those different factors end up creating a product that is unique and that can be shown to be of a really high quality consistently and be grown in a way that's environmentally sustainable. So because, we have cannabis regulations that are specific here in California, we don't have federal regulation. The appellations that we have for cannabis aren't going to look exactly like the appellations that, other products might have. But I think the most important thing and something we've definitely been advocating for in conjunction with Janine and in conjunction with the Origins Council is that the real core of an appellation, to make sure that there is a clear link between the product and the place in which it's grown and that can be demonstrated, that's really the most important thing. So I'm hopeful that the appellations that we do have for cannabis will express that and we'll have that integrity that I think those other products enjoy.
I have a question, and either one of you can answer this. Is there a protection that's afforded by an appellation that isn't already in place in trademark and patent law?
Sure. I'm happy to speak to that. So, appellation of origin and geographic indications, which is the larger sort of regime under which appellations fall, are collective intellectual property rights. And so they differ significantly from trademarks and copyrights because those are held by individual businesses. This is a collective region-based intellectual property right, and it's really a system. It's comprehensive in the sense that it's a regulatory framework. It's generally housed under a regulatory authority. So the enforceability is much greater in that sense. And you also have standards that are associated with it. And so it's got the force of law as a regulatory system. It's got verifiable standards, and then it can be leveraged for marketing purposes. So it's a system, and in that sense, it's very unique, particularly with respect to it being a shared intellectual property right of the community that works to develop and then owns that appellation designation.
After a quick break, we're going to continue with Ross and Janine, and we're going to dig into some of the specifics about appellations. More on this fascinating and what we see as crucial issue after a short break. You're listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. If you're just joining us, in the first part of our discussion, we got an introduction to appellations, which in general, down through history, have been determined by country of origin. In this case, of course, appellations will be determined by state and local entities of one sort or another, at least until federal laws change. With us by phone are Ross Gordon, Policy Director of the Humboldt County Growers Alliance, and Janine Coleman, Executive Director of the Mendocino-based Origins Project, and she is also co-founder of the Mendocino Appellations Project.
I wanted to turn now to the proposed regulations that were released by California Department of Food and Agriculture on February 20th, and this is a question for either or both of you. I was hoping that you could just kind of give us an overview of what the proposed regulations look like.
I'm happy to talk about that. So the regulations are sort of the first specific guidance we have on what appellations will really look like materially in practice. And, you know, as Janine mentioned, this is now 5 years in the making. Like, this has been a long process. And so it's really, I think, an exciting thing to finally see some concrete direction about what they'll look like. And that's not to say that they're final. You know, we'll be commenting on them, and that those comments, as you mentioned, will be open until April 6th. And after that, we may get some changes, and we hope to see at least some changes. But in general, the sort of process or framework that CDFA is laying out is that they're asking that the real critical thing is an appellation petition. So the idea is that a group of farmers, they're saying at least three independent cultivation businesses, would need to get together and put together a petition for creating an appellation in that region. And they submit that petition to CDFA for approval or change or whatever. And CDFA is requiring a number of things to be included in that petition. One, I think, sort of obvious thing that they're including is the geographical boundary. You know, what are the boundaries of the appellation? One thing that I think it's important to note about that is that they're saying that the boundaries of an appellation cannot be the same as the boundaries of a county. So when we're talking about appellations, we're not talking about a Humboldt County appellation, for example. What we're talking about is likely regions within Humboldt County or within Mendocino County, places like just ideas. I'm not saying this is what it has to be, but places like Willow Creek or Mattole Watershed or some smaller region like that. So in an appellation petition, farmers would be able to decide what the geographical boundaries of that area are. They would be asked to talk a little bit about the geography of that area, things like the climate, the elevation, any geological features, any cultural practices in that area that are common for cultivation or things that bind the region together culturally. And then in addition to that, one really major part of California appellations, which I think really sets them apart and makes them really meaningful designations, are that these petitions are supposed to specify the standards, practices, and cultivars used in cultivation. So what does that mean? So there's some definitions for each of those terms, but to put them briefly, the idea of standards would be some quantifiable measurement, some standard that you apply to the quality of cannabis that's produced. Practices would deal with a practice that's used in cultivation that could be potentially expanded, but right now they're thinking more an agricultural practice. And then cultivars can be a list of cultivars or strains or varietals that are either included within the appellation or excluded within the appellation. And CDFA basically will take all of that information. They will make a determination if a petition is complete. They will give the community or anyone interested, I think it's 30 days, to submit public comment on whether the public thinks that appellation makes sense, is representative of the community, is representative of the unique geography of that area, and then we'll reach a decision about whether to approve or deny that appellation. There's a lot more complexity than that, but in I think the interest of, you know, keeping things relatively short, I think that's a lot of what CDFA will be requiring. And the thing I really want to emphasize is that farmers are in charge of the appellation petition. Farmers decide what they want to include in that petition, the boundaries they want to draw, and the practices that they want to specify.
Janine, just to follow up with you on that same thing, same goes for Mendocino. Are you talking with groups of cultivators now in Mendocino about the same things that Ross just outlined for Humboldt?
Let me take a moment and just clarify. Origins Council is a statewide 501c4 organization. So we're actually partnered with HCGA and the local trade association here in Mendocino County, MCA, organizations in Big Sur and Nevada County and Sonoma and Trinity. So we're pretty broad in terms of the work that we're doing on both the community organizing side and the policy side for statewide policy. And so the conversations are really kind of running through that circuit and parallel and, of course, unique in some respects with, you know, different environments and geographic considerations from community to community. But it's been a really interesting conversation to have simultaneously with all of these regions and kind of compare and contrast as we all move forward with this program.
Ross, I wanted to follow up a little bit on some of the things that you were saying. I'm trying to envision how this is going to come forward as the appellations are defined. And it seems to me like there would need to be a fair amount of consensus building, especially if we're talking about an appellation being specific to certain types of cultivars. Some would be included, some would not. And I would imagine that within the community, there are a lot of different opinions about what should be included and what should not. So how is that consensus building process taking place or going to take place?
So I'd actually love to defer to Janine on this one, because I know she's been taking the lead on a lot of this organizing and thinking through these types of issues.
Great.
Yeah, well, one of the primary points of organizing for us is to work with the local trade associations, because, you know, we can support through our organization with respect to advisors and tools and templates and facilitating the conversation, but it's really important for us to work with local community leadership that can help facilitate that conversation on a more macro level with the community. And yes, it is a challenging component, but it's a very, very much the heart of Appalachians in terms of aggregating shared resources and really having that negotiative process within the community to really have the output of a shared identity and really being able to translate the shared value set through the standards and practices. And, you know, also, I think it's really important to emphasize, and this is something that the agency, I think, has really expressed in what we're looking at with these proposed rules, which is that, you know, this is going to be a program that's developed over time. And so as the industry develops, as these appellations move forward, there's the mechanism to be able to amend them. I think the program will develop over time. And so that consensus building process will happen in pieces. And so I think there's a lot of good tools in place. I really do want to mention county of origin as a really important part of this, because that's a geographic indication that allows for that broader conversation and education to happen around geographic indications and that immediate deliverable of being able to really move forward with a clearly defined political boundary and no really additional standards associated with it, and be able to move forward with that shared identity and marketing leverage and start to really build awareness with the consumer while the appellation development takes time and kind of iterates and develops as the industry matures and the program matures.
And during the consensus building process, or the process during which the appellation is defined, are county governments or local governments involved in that process, or is this done by the industry and then taken later to the government?
Yeah, that's a really important piece, and this is very much a traditional mechanism of how appellations are developed. It's a very ground-up activity, and so the statute is very clear that CDFA is providing a process by which cultivators may establish appellation of origin, and it's really to the group to define, you know, what those physical boundaries are and the cultural boundaries and really look at what the shared standards, practices, and cultivars are. And then CDFA reviews those petitions, and they really don't participate in amending them. They either, you know, grant the designation, or, you know, you would ostensibly come back if you were denied and strengthen your petition. And so it's really in the hands of the cultivators in the community to really identify and define those boundaries. And the purview of the program with appellation of origins under the state's purview in terms of the authority of it from a regulatory standpoint, so under CDFA's purview, whereas county of origin, because it's tied to the municipality, there's a different relationship there. And so county government may have more of an opportunity to engage with county of origin designation, but really appellation of origins really between the petitioning farming community that's putting it forward and then working with CDFA in terms of the regulatory agency that has oversight of the program.
Ross, let me ask you what I think might be a little bit of a granular question here. Do we know yet about enforcement of this. And what I'm getting at there is, will there be any oversight to make sure that farmers are abiding by the standards that are established so that the appellation remains of a high quality? Do we know about anything about enforcement? And what about if bought soil is used or amendments are added that didn't come from that specific area? Do we know anything about that yet?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and I think it is a really important one. I think there's maybe two levels of enforcement. There's a level of enforcement of how do you make sure that the farmers are following the standards and the practices that are within the appellation itself, and how do you make sure, even in a more general way, even if this isn't part of the appellation petition, that everything coming out of the appellation is high quality. That's something that farmers will probably want to enforce on themselves. And then down the line, I think you have an enforcement question about marketing and about what if people are trying to use the name of an appellation, you know, that aren't actually part of the appellation region, basically fraudulent, you know, knockoff labeling. So when it comes to the actual, you know, practices on the farm, what CDFA is proposing is really that record keeping is going to be the critical part of that enforcement. So one thing that they're asking is that whatever standards farmers are agreeing to abide by, that they be able to tie those to some record keeping requirement, which is going to be able to track that standard. And then they're saying that the farmers is going to have to be able to show that they're keeping those records to show that they're meeting those standards and requirements. I think it's an interesting question, and it's one that, you know, we've brought up with our membership, and we're actively in discussion about of, do we think that that's sufficient enforcement? Do we think there should be inspections? I think that's a really interesting question, because we definitely do want to make sure that there's integrity to how that works. Then down the line, I think there's a question about fraudulent labeling. You know, what if somebody, you know, in some other region of the state, or eventually some other region of the country, or eventually some other country entirely, you know, wants to use the Humboldt name, or wants to use the Willow Creek name, or wants to use the Lost Coast name, or whatever the case might be, and they're sort of fraudulently advertising in that way. And state law does provide, you know, penalties and sanctions to go after people who are engaging in that kind of practice. Over the long term, I think it's something that's going to require a lot of attention. It's something that we definitely see for any successful product, that people try to imitate that labeling and sort of benefit from it without being, you know, the region that it applies to. So if you look at, you know, Napa Valley, for example, obviously, it's, you know, probably the most successful wine appellation, at least in the United States. You know, they do a lot of work to go out and enforce that appellation globally, because there's a lot of people trying to knock that off. And it's sort of a problem that in some ways we hope to have, because we hope that appellations and county of origin become successful enough programs that we have that problem of imitators. And I think that's something that we will cross that bridge when we come to it.
You had mentioned earlier, Ross, that the proposed rules specify that you can't, that your appellation can't be the same as the, you know, the boundaries of a county. So does that mean that there couldn't be a Humboldt County appellation?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's an important point to emphasize, that, you know, the state of California, and this is now, you know, 5 years in the making, has two separate programs. They have what's called a county of origin program, and they have an appellations program. And those are separate programs in every way. The county of origin program is what, you know, allows you to label your product as Humboldt or Mendocino if it comes from Humboldt or if it comes from Mendocino, and forbids anyone else from doing that if it doesn't come from those counties. And that's really meant to be an inclusive program. It's meant to be a program where anybody who's farming in those regions are able to benefit from the program. There's no requirement that you farm in a certain way. There's no standards, practices, and cultivars. There's no petitions. It's straightforward. It's simple. It's as inclusive as possible. Appellations are a different program in that they're really trying to be exclusive. What gives, you know, things like Napa wine or Bordeaux or any of these other appellations meaning and value is that they have exclusivity. You know, they're tied to specific regions, specific practices that have specific geographies and climates. So I think it's a good thing that CDFA came out and said that a county cannot be the same as an appellation, because I think it really points in the direction we need to go, which is having these smaller regions that have some integrity in terms of the community and in terms of the geography, and being able to show the ways in which these are really community-created products and really be able to talk about the communities and the climates and the geographies and the cultures that are producing this cannabis.
After a quick break, we're going to continue our talk with Ross Angenine about protecting the strength of the brand in this part of California generally. Before the break, though, a new feature. We have partnered with Sensei Magazine. Here's managing editor Nora Mounts to tell us what's coming up in their April edition.
My name is Nora Mounts, and I'm the managing editor at Sensei Emerald Triangle, and we are a lifestyle publication. We launched in the North Coast area last February. Sensei Emerald Triangle is part of a Sensei Media Group, and it's a collection of magazines that are actually published across the country, featuring culture, art, food, recreation, tourism, wellness, a lot of the fun stuff in life, and certainly cannabis is part of that. So the way we talk about cannabis and the way we kind of feature it in our magazine is that it's a big part of life. And so, of course, cannabis is kind of bundled into our larger conversations and stories and writing about culture and health and all of that. We publish the magazine digitally and in print every month. So about the first of each month, it'll start showing up around town, and we distribute it at natural food stores, coffee shops, community centers, dispensaries, doctor's offices, wellness centers, places like that. Should be pretty easy to get. And then we're also online on Instagram, we're at Sensei Magazine, and on Facebook, we're at Sensei Media Group. And then our newly redesigned website is SenseiMag.com. And so that's where you can find all the digital content. Coming up right around the corner, April is our Greener and Cleaner 420 issue. On the cover, we have a story about the Krenov School, and that may or may not be on people's radar, but it is a really world-renowned woodworking school that's down in Fort Bragg that has been there since 1981 and used to be part of College of the Redwoods. Elizabeth Archer was the writer on that and went down and spent some time with the director of the school, Laura Mays, and we showcased some really talented craftsmen and their pieces that they've made at the school. So that's what's going on the cover. I also wrote a little bit about sustainability in cannabis, which is a pet topic of mine that I like to write about. We also featured a new writer based out of Mendocino. Her name is Maury Natura, and she is the author of Wildfire Weeds, which is her personal account of fleeing fire in Northern California and how it's impacted the cannabis industry. And she actually wrote a really great article about slow food and foraging. And we featured another new writer, a local poet here in Eureka, Katie Gurren, and she wrote a poem about climate change. And then a couple other things from our national editorial staff. Our national editor-in-chief is Stephanie Wilson, and she wrote a really in-depth piece on CBN. And that might be new to a lot of folks, but that is a lesser-known cannabinoid that scientists and cannabis advocates have known about for a while, but it just hasn't been showcased in the market as much. And it's a really great cannabinoid for sleep aid. And so it's kind of about her personal experience and how helpful and impactful it was in finding better sleep. And a lot of different companies, both here in the Emerald Triangle and across the country, are starting to experiment and learn more about CBN and understanding how it affects our wellness. And then last but not least, we had a really fun piece by another one of our national editors, Robin Griggs-Lawrence, and she wrote about cannabis weddings. And so really kind of a up-and-coming trend. Certainly it affects our area. We already have a great local economy for the wedding industry. And couples from all over the country and all over the world are traveling to legal states to integrate cannabis into their ceremonies in a unique and tasteful way. And so it was a really interesting piece about infused cuisine, incorporating cannabis into floral bouquets. So those are some of the fun things that we have coming up in April. SenseiMag.com.
Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. We're talking appellations. Since before California legalization, we here at the Humboldt Chronicles have been hearing from people in several states about the importance of protecting and taking advantage of the good name of places like Humboldt and Mendocino in the cannabis world. Allowing for appellations in this state could help do just that. Back with us to talk about this some more are Ross Gordon, Policy Director of the Humboldt County Growers Alliance, and Janine Coleman, Executive Director of the Origins Project. She joins us from Mendocino County.
And Janine, as I'm sure you are well aware, as we all are, the rollout of regulations for the legalized cannabis market was a little bumpy and continues to be. There were changes in regulations after a short period of time. The track and trace program has its own headaches associated with it. Do you have any confidence that rolling out the rules and implementation of appellations will go any more smoothly?
Yeah, I really do, because
you know, setting up the entire regulatory framework for a supply chain of an existing industry that's been in place in California for decades is an enormous undertaking. And so I agree, it's been problematic. But with respect to appellations, in some respects, it's simpler. I mean, it's a voluntary program, and you know, because essentially the petitions are authored by the farmers, I think that really sort of simplifies matters in many respects. And so I think that it should be a lot smoother than what we've seen.
Ross, do we have any idea yet or any indication yet as to whether there will be a cap on the number of appellations granted?
So at this point, there's no cap being proposed on the number of appellations granted. I don't see a reason why there would be. The only thing I that would come to mind related to that, I think right now the appellation petition fees that they are recommending are pretty high. I think a little over $20,000 for an appellation petition. So that seems to be one of the ways that they're really trying to limit the number of petitions. My hope is that would be lowered and would be made a little more accessible. But, you know, otherwise there's no limitation on the number of appellations.
Well, let me just follow up with you on that. About $20,000 or so, and we know that this would be a number of farmers collectively applying for this appellation. Is there a limit on the number of farmers who could go in on that?
So there's no limit on the number of farmers. You know, the minimum that they're proposing right now is three. I think one discussion we've been having, and I don't know if Janine, you have more thoughts on this, but we're discussing, should it be greater than three? You know, because three farmers is not necessarily the same as widespread community input. So I think our hope in general is that larger number of farmers would be involved in these petitions, and that the petitions would really demonstrate community consensus. But, you know, to your question, there's no maximum on the number of farmers who can be a part of a petition.
They don't anticipate an appellation being the same geographic boundary as a county. How big could it be? Like, could you, for example, have an Emerald Triangle appellation that would take in all of Humboldt and Trinity and Mendocino?
So I can speak to that because we've looked at that quite a bit. And, you know, one of the challenges there is that those are all political boundaries. And so, you know, I think, frankly, the way the petitions are proposed in the proposed regulations, with the amount of sort of geographic layers that you have to really, you know, describe, and then the shared standards, practices, and cultivars, I think that piece, the consensus building, the boundaries that really need to be defined, really, you know, as Ross said, kind of make it more applicable to a smaller region than a larger region, such as the multi-county region like that.
Ross, do we know, or Janine, either one of you, do we know yet, or has there been discussion yet about how federal legalization that seems imminent at some point in the future, and who knows when, how that might impact state and county approved appellations? And is anybody really talking about that question yet?
I'm happy to talk about that one. So we've, for the past couple months, started at HCGA, we've started engaging that question of what would be needed for this to be protected at the federal level. You know, I think it's something which is absolutely essential over the long term and has always been essential. We developed this program in California because we had to, because those were the tools that were available to us. But ultimately, there's not really too much of a point to appellations if they're not protected in the rest of the country and ultimately in the rest of the world.
Right.
And it's probably outside of appellations, outside California, that we anticipate appellations are ultimately going to have the most meaning and most value. So we know that there are other, you know, there's no other state that has an appellations program right now or a county of origin program, but we do know that there's interest. You know, California is not the only state that has legacy cultivating regions. I think Oregon's Applegate Valley in southern Oregon is definitely a major one, and we've spoken with farmers up there, and we know that they have a lot of interest in this as well. You know, we've spoken to farmers all across the country in different states and regions who are interested in some type of county of origin or appellations protection. So I think it is something that there's sort of two tracks to it. One is, you know, will it move forward state by state? I think Oregon is the most likely state that you would see it moving forward, especially once California has a little more certainty and has final regulations. The other track that it could move forward on is at the federal level. So, you know, as I think we mentioned earlier in the show, you know, wine is regulated for appellations at the federal level by the TTB, the Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau. And ultimately, there really should be a single federal standard for appellations. We think it's important for it to be standardized, for it to be the same in every region, that we don't have a state-by-state framework. So we have started raising the issue with trade associations representing cannabis businesses at the federal level. We're hopeful to start making that an issue. I think that there's some interest in the federal government in starting to move from the question of should we legalize to how should we legalize. And, you know, ultimately, this is something we're going to need protected at the federal level and then even further in international treaties to make sure that whatever we develop here in California has power across the country and across the world.
So a lot of work to do. Jenny, let me ask you, could one farmer be involved in more than one appellation? I'm kind of envisioning some sort of Venn diagram of appellations where one farmer overlaps with another and so on. What about that, or do we know yet?
So in the proposed regulations, there's two mechanisms that would afford that opportunity. One is they're proposing partially overlapping appellations. And so in that instance, you could have a farmer, a group of farmers, fall into an overlapping situation, so two appellations, or nested, where one appellation is entirely contained within another. So those are the two opportunities that we would see proposed in the regulations right now. Our organization has concerns about the overlapping, because with respect to the consensus building again, and also for consumer understanding, it's difficult to have overlapping boundaries because it makes, you know, both appellations less distinct. And so that is a challenge we're looking at. I think that nested appellations are an important thing, and it's something you see a lot in AVAs, particularly with respect to wanting to increase to higher level or greater level of standards within a sub-nested appellation.
I want to talk for a second about cost, and I apologize for jumping around a little bit here, but one thing I've learned is that nothing gets done without there being some sort of cost associated with it. There may be an application fee when we get to that stage, and certainly enforcement is going to involve some costs. So who's going to bear these costs?
Well, the way that it's proposed right now, and some of the supporting documents for the proposed regulations project what they anticipate the cost being, and it's entirely being borne by the producers at this point. That's what's being proposed. So there's the $20,000+ for filing the petition. Then there's the cost to prepare the petition. And CDFA has projected that to be somewhere around $20,000. Experts in the field that we've spoken to think it might be around $50,000. It's quite a lot of research that needs to go into establishing the petitions. And then there's the marketing. And so kind of, you know, looking at how we can address the barriers to entry with respect to the financial side of things, because we need to fund the program. We're looking at different opportunities such as notice of use, right? So you can establish an appellation, and then as folks fold in and want to actually use that appellation, or downstream supply chain wants to use that designation on the product, they can pay a notice of use fee. So that's one potential way we see of spreading the cost out. But at present, it's a significant burden upon the producers.
Ross, let me ask you, you talk with a lot of farmers right around here, and some of them actually have been on this particular program before, so we know some of the same folks. When you talk to them about this issue, I can imagine that a lot of them might be anxious to get this going. Of course, it's not going to kick in until next year, but I can imagine that they're anxious to get this going. What kinds of concerns do they have about rolling this out, or what are you hearing from them as far as questions that they have, even at this early stage?
Yeah, so I definitely think people are very anxious to get this going. I mean, this has been years in the making, and I think it's something which a lot of people have been anticipating for a long time. I think there's excitement, and there's also some trepidation a little bit. Obviously, I think people are very they've dealt with a lot of regulation, and they've dealt with a lot of complexity, and they've dealt with a lot of rules. And so I think there's a little bit of anxiety about entering into something new like this, which is not the most complex thing, but is pretty complex. You know, you have to put together a petition, you have to organize your community, you have to think about, you know, what standards are you going to follow, you have to think about what, you know, what your marketing is going to look like. You know, there's a lot of questions that are going to go into this over the long term. So I think, you know, there's some anxiety about that level of complexity on top of everything that everyone is already dealing with. But I think it's something that people ultimately want to happen, are ready to happen. I think I'm having a lot of conversations now about, you know, what kind of organizing are people going to do to make these appellations a reality? Because it's going to, you know, involve a lot of community organizing, a lot of community input, a lot of, you know, reaching out to people and coming to consensus and agreement on what an appellation will look like. And I think that's the next big barrier that people are going to, you know, have to think about encountering once we get some certainty about what these regulations look like.
And Janine, is it the same situation there in Mendocino? And are there any different issues in Mendocino that we haven't heard about? Because most of our focus to this point has been Humboldt. Are there different issues that you're dealing with in the Mendocino area?
Sure. I mean, I would say, you know, Mendocino has its challenges, but there's certainly more challenges, you know, in other areas, particularly areas facing bans. And so it's, you know, it's always a work in progress. I think the biggest challenge facing our community is the COVID crisis. Yeah. And I do want to kind of speak to appellations in that context. And I think it's a good dovetail from what you're saying, Ross, with respect to community organizing. At its heart, you know, appellations aren't, you know, weren't born necessarily out of marketing as much as they were born out of, you know, the need to survive and really come together as agrarian communities and, you know, aggregate resources and work together. And I think the experience that we're all having right now and as we head into our respective orders, you know, I think that there will be a lot of really powerful community organizing. And I feel like this will be a really, it's been a really interesting process for me to have the two scopes of work overlap. I mean, I've been really working on developing this policy for the past 5 years now, and it's really interesting that this is happening simultaneous to the regulations being published and kind of thinking about, you know, how things are going to roll out and become more tangible. And, you know, I think that we are a resilient culture and community, and I think this is a really beautiful opportunity to come together and really codify that and really get our narrative out there.
Another question for both of you. Are appellations in, say, Humboldt and Mendocino and maybe also in Trinity worth a little more than they would be in some other part of the state or even some other state, given the brand strength of the Emerald Triangle?
Yeah, I'd be happy to speak to that. I absolutely think so. I mean, you know, the Emerald Triangle and our respective regions and some of the other producing regions like Nevada County, I mean, these regions are famous the world over and have been for decades. And so, again, to speak to the county of origin opportunity, when it comes to conjunctive labeling and having a product that has a California stamp on it and then has a Humboldt stamp on it and then has a Mattole appellation designation on it, that's a very powerful tool to have those conjunctive labels because the consumer is going to relate and understand that California cannabis is the best. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the Emerald Triangle recognition, and then the individual counties. And, you know, folks might not know where the Mattole is. And so that's a really tremendous leg up that we have with respect to rolling this program out because we do have that renown already established.
Ross, you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, one really exciting thing about appellations is, you know, I think a lot of people know across the country and across the world about the Emerald Triangle. And they might know about Humboldt County, and they might know about Mendocino County, and they might have a general idea that that's where cannabis is grown, or that's where the best cannabis is grown, or that's where, you know, a center of cannabis culture is. I think what appellations do is allow us to build off, as Janine is saying, that conjunctive labeling, that labeling of both Humboldt County and the region that you're in, to build off that kind of mythology that maybe is out there and those, you know, assumptions and beliefs that are out there and kind of grounded in something a little bit more real. So it's like, okay, you know about Humboldt County, but do you know about this community of people on the Lost Coast in the Mattole Valley, you know, who grow in this way, who, you know, grow outdoors in the sun with these practices that have this history, that have this type of community, and really make that sort of concrete association. And I think that combination is one thing that makes Appalachian so powerful. And last thing I wanted to say, I really, as much as I think, you know, the Emerald Triangle does have sort of this power, I also don't want to discount the other, especially legacy cultivating regions, places like Nevada County, places like Big Sur, places like Southern Oregon, where there's a lot of amazing people growing a lot of amazing cannabis with, you know, really beautiful, unique cultures and communities. And I'm also really excited for what Appalachians can do to tell that collective story of all these different communities and not just here in the Emerald Triangle.
Well, thank you both for educating us. This has been an enlightening discussion. Thank you both for your time very much. I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. This edition of the Humboldt Chronicles will be posted soon at 941lounge.com, at lostcoastoutpost.com, and at iTunes for listening and downloading. Thanks again to our guests, Ross Gordon and Janine Coleman. Finally, a huge thank you to our sponsors, Bear Extraction House, Lost Coast Science, and Charleston Tree Service. We couldn't do it without you. We'll be back with the Humboldt Chronicles at 6 p.m. on the third Wednesday of each month, which means we will see you next time on April the 15th at 6 p.m.